Welcome to another edition of Kicking It with Raphael here on World Football Daily. New episode and a new day. Last week, we had Mark Cerber on from Fox Sports to discuss all the biggest news and latest news in the transfer window, which had pretty much closed in most nations across the world. Then we had on Ben Middleton from Channel 2, Israel's premier broadcasting station, to discuss how the Israelis and the Jews have perceived this whole Nicholas Anelka affair, which has blown up across social media and everywhere, pretty much. Next on the show, and this week on the show, first guest of the day from ESPN FC and Bleacher Report and Elastico, evaluating all the big talent across the world, and live from the beautiful nation of China, Christopher Atkins is back on. Christopher, always a pleasure to have you on. Welcome.
Yeah, it's always great to be on your show, Raphael.
First off, before we get going, there's a big news coming out of Evergrande, and obviously this happened last night. I don't know how I missed it, but Italian international Alessandro De Monti has come over from Bologna, which we spoke about before the show. They've been doing a lot of interesting things with Roma and with Fiorentina. A lot of their players have been sent there on loan. Astonishing fee here. How much money was this deal?
It's been quoted at 6.9 million euros at the current time.
Wow. And I mean, we remember a lot of his time, and he's played for a lot of big clubs, primarily West Ham United, I remember. I guess he's been on Bologna. Where was his main his time? I'm just blanking.
Well, I mean, obviously, anyone who follows the Premier League, like you said, remembers that time at West Ham. But he's been around a few of Serie A's kind of mid-range teams, if you like. He moved to West Ham from, I think, Livorno. He's been at Brescia and Bologna since. I mean, so he's not, in that sense, he's not been at one of Italy's big clubs, and that's probably a bit to do with his playing style. He's a bit of a unique character, if you like. He's got lots of individual skill, but maybe doesn't play for the team as much as the big clubs would like. But then again, he's in the Italy squad. He's been a regular in there for the last few years, so Cesare Prandelli obviously likes him. It's a real coup for the Chinese league and another step in the right direction.
Yeah, very, very exciting. You know, I was going to ask you this before we went on, but why not? We're on, so let's do it. I've always wondered why, you know, if especially like a guy like him can go over, what would you think of a guy like Cassano, who's playing right now for Parma, obviously has reached the peak of his career a few years ago, what we really remember him for is his time in Roma, which seems like it was years ago. Do you see a guy like him, who's playing very similar in a mid-major team in Serie A, making the hop over to China?
I obviously can't say whether he'll come to China or whether he'll go elsewhere, but he'd be the kind of player who would be basically worshipped out here. I mean, he's got enough reputation that he would be a god on arrival, if you like. And then, obviously, if he showed any of the kind of mercurial talents he's shown over the last 10, 15 years, I guess, in Italy, then the fans would love him. And it's what people need to understand is the league in China is still, in terms of tactics, it's still developing. It's very much closer to South America even than Europe in terms of tactics, in that a lot of it comes down to the individual skill of attacking players rather than the team as a whole. And that's different for Guangzhou Evergrande, who are a very good team unit, and there's a couple of others who have more modern style tactics. But players like Cassano, when it does come down to that, beating a defender one-on-one, etc., are brilliant, and he would fit in very well here, I think.
Interesting. No, I just think about, you know, when I see these signings and I think about guys, and then of course another way of looking at it is the MLS, and I don't know why suddenly we're going into Chinese football, but we are, because that's how the show is. We just talk about what's on our minds. What exactly is the difference between the MLS and the Chinese League? Not in the way of the obvious things. Not obviously, we know the MLS has more money, and it's been actually, I guess it's been around for the same amount of time. But we know the main differences in the league. But why would a player, Christopher, rather come to China than the MLS? I mean, the brand, is the brand the same in China as in America? We've seen guys like Stephen Marbury make the transition from being a superstar in the NBA to coming over to China. Is the brand enough? Or, you know, we're seeing right now, let's be honest, right now there's pretty much three places, maybe four, but three places that you can go once you're either past your prime or you want to make money. That's the MLS, Gulf nations like Qatar, Dubai, these kind of leagues, and then China. What is, you know, why would you, how would you convince people to come to China instead of those two other leagues?
That's a good question. I think long term, the MLS and the Chinese Super League both have incredible potential for development. I mean, you've seen in the last couple of days all the stuff about Beckham. A lot of articles, therefore, speculating about the future of the MLS. I think China also has similar potential for expansion if they can put behind the issues they've had in the past with match fixing and corruption, etc. So that's a big priority, and hopefully we're slowly working past those issues. The first reason people come is obviously money, and then beyond that, I think some players, Drogba spoke about it when he came briefly, was there's the idea of helping to build Chinese football. I guess for some players, maybe towards the end of their career, that appeals. And the third thing is, compared to the Gulf nations, at least, you have crowds and passionate crowds. So that has to be much more appealing than playing in front of a handful of people in Qatar each week.
Right. Interesting. We've seen a lot of these guys make the moves. And what's more shocking is what's different, I think, between the Qatari League and the MLS is some players are going there now, not after their careers are past their prime, but during their prime, which is a bit shocking in my opinion. There's some reports that Cisse was going to go there, Papi Cisse, but obviously that didn't happen. Okay, moving on though. Last week we spoke about the big transfers, the big hot names, everything that everyone knows. But now we want to focus more on specific players that people might not know, who are still very young, and maybe not. And it's possible maybe that they're not going to the big clubs yet, but they could be on their way there. You always write about African players, obviously players from Asia, players from pretty much everywhere in the globe, and that's why I love having you on the show. Who are some guys that we should keep an eye on that, you know, aren't 18 years old and they're already superstars, but guys who you see have a lot of raw talent, have the potential to develop, and where did they go in this transfer window? Where did they make the moves from?
Oh, wow. That's a very open-ended question right there. I think one move that did catch the eye, and I think it was even done before the January window, but we need to wait until the player's 18. That was Kelechi Iheanacho, who I think we might even have spoken about after the Under-17 World Cup. He was the star of that tournament for Nigeria. He was their playmaker, and he's moved to Manchester City, or he signed a free contract with them. So he'll move to East London once he turns 18, and that's a massive coup for them, considering just how well he played at that tournament.
Interesting. I remember talking about when you came on for that. So he will be at City. Another thing that I've been getting some tweets about, and people want to know how exactly, and I was hoping you knew this, maybe you don't, but how exactly do a lot of these African players get scouted? If let's say they don't have a good tournament in one of these big tournaments, you know, are there agents now who have good connections with agents in Africa? But you know, it's this globalization of all these African players that are starting to make the move. to France, and you just said England. How does that exactly happen? I think people want to know, like, if this player is 16 years old and lives in a city that, you know, a tiny little city in Ghana, how by age 17, Christopher, is he going to be on someone's map if he's not on the U17 team? And I'll take that another step further. If you're not on the U17 team, or the U18 or the U20, is it possible for you to get noticed?
I think it is. It's not as easy because obviously you don't have that platform, and having those kind of experiences on your CV really helps when that club is not maybe aware of your potential. Because we've all seen YouTube videos of players, and every player looks like the next Messi. It becomes very difficult for clubs at that point. But what generally happens, and if we're going to get into the workings of agents and scouts, some the bigger clubs have scouts in these areas. The Manchester United, the Manchester Cities, they have scouts who go to all the various youth tournaments, and they may even have scouts on the ground in some of these countries. But then when you're talking with places like Israel or Sweden, you're probably talking of clubs relying more on agent connections at that point, and that might be say an Israeli agent having connections with agents in Ghana, or it may be that they have connections with the clubs and they go out there themselves to source players. So what will happen then? The agent will find a player, let's say Iheanacho, and he would then bring him to a club and offer him with the CV and the videos, etc. The club may make a decision based on that. They may ask for the player to come on trial, in which case there would be an agreement needed with the player's club in Africa. Or they may send someone out to go and look at him on the ground. The most likely situation for, say, a teenage African player would be that they would be invited for a trial. Their club would normally be willing, given that they could make a fairly large amount of money out of the transfer.
All right, and we got another tweet coming in asking what exactly happened with Hulk. I mean, there was so much hype about him. He made the move to Russia for money, obviously. Where do you see him going? Is his career? I mean, he's now not that young anymore. We remember when he was much younger. What's going to happen with him? Obviously, he didn't move. So, what do you see happening?
Hulk is he's got a big few months ahead of him. The World Cup in Brazil, at the moment he looks like he'll be involved, which is obviously great for him. His scoring record in Russia is very good. I think he's probably on about 2 goals every 3 games, if I remember right off the top of my head. He also got a few goals in Europe this season, so he's not doing badly by any means. He's just a bit out of the way, which is I think what the players quickly realize, that when they're in Ukraine, Russia, or if they're outside Europe, MLS, China, Qatar, they're not going to be seen by their national team go-tos, which is why coming back to Diamante, it's interesting to read that he has assurances that Prandelli's going to keep watching him for the Italy squad. But Hulk, at the moment, is in the Brazil squad. He has a great platform in the summer, presuming he's selected, to remind some teams of his ability. And I would think he'll want to move on within the next 12 months.
And why do you think, I mean, was it straight up that he went to Zenit St. Petersburg for the money? I mean, with such a phenomenal player coming out of Porto, and we've seen so many good players come out of Porto, coaches, players, was it strictly the money?
To some extent, I mean, he was at Porto, and he would have had his salary significantly improved. You could argue that he could have got a similar salary at, say, Chelsea, but they weren't willing to meet Porto's valuation. And Porto's valuation, if we remember, was somewhere around the 70 million euro mark, and they got not far off that in the end. So, I mean, considering Zenit were willing to pay the fee, he didn't really have too much of a choice. He either stays at Porto and doesn't leave the rest of his contract, or he goes to Russia and earns good money in a league that at that point looked as it was going to start spending some significant money.
Right. We've spoken with Elliot Rothwell, who's an analyst for the Mirror, about what happened with Anzhi and all their financial problems. What's also interesting about Hulk is that he played in Japan, I believe, I think, before.
Yeah,
so he's played in some interesting leagues. Porto obviously was where I remember him from, but people probably do remember his time there. And then he also was in Italy before that. Okay, let's move on now. And I know we're talking about a lot of things, but that's what's great about having someone like you on, is that we can. You wrote an article recently about Luke Shaw. The talent there is just absolutely ridiculous, especially with how well he's been playing. When a guy is talented, Christopher, at this age, how do teams look at his ceiling? I mean, do they say, okay, he's going to continue to improve? Is he so talented that maybe he can't even improve that much? What do you see the ceiling of Southampton's left back, Luke Shaw? I mean, what is the talent? Or excuse me, the ceiling.
I think it's clear to say that anyone able to hold their own week in, week out in the Premier League at 18 and or 17 when he first came into the side is clearly a massive talent. And even if it wasn't significant improvement, that's it's already a good starting point, if you like. Given his age, you'd expect that there's room for the improvement, the experience, and growing into your body even would bring. So, I mean, there's those basic improvements he can make besides the tactical and technical coaching that he'll receive in the coming years. He will go to, I would think, Chelsea now in the summer. If not there, then more than likely Manchester United. The English clubs aren't going to miss out on him. English talent is hard enough to come by. When it does emerge like that, they tend to go all in. He's a Chelsea fan from his youth, so that's, if you read the reports, that's his preference at the moment. It's difficult to say. Will he kind of plateau, or will he go on to be kind of like Ashley Cole and one of the best left backs in European football for a number of years? That would be the hope. But youth development, as we both know, is very difficult to call. There's a number of factors that come in: injury, the environment they're in, opportunity. If you move to Chelsea, for example, and then was consigned to the reserves, that would obviously hinder his development. So let's wait and see on that one. But the talent's there.
Okay, we'll end with this, and there's a million things that I could ask you, and of course we'll have to have you back on really soon, but something that's I keep noticing about this team, and we've spoken about, that is the Brazil national team. We just spoke about Hulk. You wrote an article a little while ago about Fernandinho, who of course has made his debut season in City this year, and he's 28 years old. Then as soon as I thought of him and what's going to happen with him, I also thought of Fred, who in the end decided to stay in the Brazilian team, in the Brazilian league. So you look at this team, and the World Cup is very close. There's ridiculous talent in the youth system, in the younger players, Neymar, Oscar, and all the big names that we know. But do you see these guys like Fred and Hulk and it's Fernandinho. Do you see these three guys being talented enough to make the World Cup roster with all the other big names that are much younger than them and that have as many caps as these guys do, except with taking Fred out? But how do you see this playing out? I think this is something very interesting going into the World Cup, that Brazil will have to decide if they're going to give opportunities to these guys that have only, you know, Fernandinho, who's only gotten 5 caps. How would you play this out if you were the Brazil manager?
I think Hulk at the moment is in position to go, and he'll likely go ahead of Lucas Moura, who's a PSG, or Bernard, who's a Shakhtar. One of those two looks like missing out at the moment, purely because neither has been in particularly great form. Lucas has picked up recently, but hasn't exactly shone in Paris because he's not been starting enough. And Bernard is, again, kind of out the way in Ukraine. But then when it comes to the other two you mentioned, Fred is a definite. He'll more than likely start. And you might say he's not as talented as pretty much all his teammates, but what he is he's a very experienced number 9 now. He's got better with age, and if he's fit, he's reliable, and that's something that Scolari values. It's better to have that than another 20-year-old who may star and who may be. It may be awful, to be honest. At least Fred knows what he's doing, even when he's maybe not in the best of form. And the guys like Neymar, Oscar, behind him, they need someone to act as a guiding presence in what's going to be a very high-pressure environment. Fernandinho has been out of the setup since, I would think, early 2012 now. He was a regular in late 2011 under Manuel Menezes, but then he picked up an injury, I think, and dropped that. Brazil started training players for the Olympic squad, and he dropped out at that point. And then he never really regained his place, but he's been exceptional for the last few months at Manchester City, and with players like Lucas Leiva, Liverpool, not in particularly good form and injury prone. We don't know how Hernandez is going to get on at Inter. Luis Gustavo has his doubters. I think there's a place in the squad for Fernandinho, and potentially Sandro at Tottenham also, if he has a good end to the season.
Really interesting. I mean, yeah, the Brazilian team, when you look at the whole aspect, and then you have all the veterans. Like a guy like Ronaldinho, who we saw how well he played in the Club World Cup. Do you see is there any chance for him to make the roster as a guy to come in, you know, in the 80th minute to try and get you that goal, or as just a free kick specialist, or do you see him out?
I genuinely hope he doesn't get called up because he'll be out of his depth, and it feels very harsh to say that. He, like you said, he at the Club World Cup, he did score, I think, in both games he played. But, for example, the Bangu Evergrande game, he was anonymous for long, long periods of the game, and only really showed up when there was a set piece to take. And for Brazil can't afford to take a player like that, especially when they have others who can take a very useful free kick when needed. I think Ronaldinho's days in against sides that play a high pressing game pretty much over. In Brazil, where there's more space and he's got time on the ball, I think that's in the environment in which he can shine now.
All right, you heard it from Christopher Atkins from ESPN FC, also with Bleacher Report, and also the editor of the Elastico. You can follow him on Twitter. What I can say about Christopher is, if you want to find a guy who's going to tweet about all the big news that everyone else tweets about, don't follow Christopher. If you want to learn about interesting football from all over the world, do follow Christopher, and that is Chris at ELASTICO. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm sure a lot of people just learned a lot of interesting things, and we hope to have you back on very soon.
Yep. Thanks a lot. It's always a pleasure.
All right. That was Christopher Atkins joining us. Christopher Atkins, of course, writes for Bleacher Report, ESPN FC, and is based out of China and is probably one of the best Asian football writers out there. And you can check out his Twitter handle at, I believe it is Chris at Elastico. Elastico is also his website where he pretty much previews all the best young and talented footballers out there in the world. And you can check out his latest article that just went on out on Bleacher Report, about the top 20 players that we should keep an eye on in the World Cup. Next guest out of the UK, Paul Wilkes, who's a freelance European football writer for a Final Four, 442, BN Sport, and some other great places, and is also known, in my eyes, as the editor of La Liga UK, one of the best places to follow La Liga in English. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
A first question that we got to ask, the big game a couple weeks ago, a couple days ago, Atletico Madrid have finally fallen. Do you believe that, you know, two losses back-to-back, also against Madrid in the Copa, do you believe this might be the end of their success and we'll see them start to drop a couple of points? Or was this just, you know, a tough week of matches against good teams?
I don't think it's the end, but I think it's going to be very difficult for him to come back from his last two results up until now. They haven't lost. They've only lost one match all season against Espanyol. And that was pretty unlucky as well. That was due to a deflected goal. These last 2 weeks, I can sort of see it in the Madrid derby last week. That was a little bit more expected, but I think Almeria was a bit of a shock. I think a lot of the issues have been for them is that when they're not further out of field, then when they're leading the league, as it were, they struggle a little bit more, whereas if they're the underdogs, then they can sort of work off that. And if they're capable of matching Barcelona game for game, but when it becomes they're out of the lead, I think psychologically they struggle a little bit. So it could be a case that drop points slightly, but hopefully they can keep things going because it makes it a lot more interesting for a three-horse race.
Yeah, definitely. Right now at the top, we have all three, Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, and Barcelona. With everything you just said, who do you expect to come in first and second when the season ends in a few months?
I actually fancy Real Madrid to do it. It's, looking back a while ago, you said looking back side, but I think things are starting to come together for him, and I think the Gareth Bale's, as long as he can keep himself injury free, then he's going to make an impact. Young Kessié is doing really well, and he's been has an unbelievable impact really for someone of such a young age. And I think they're getting it all together really, especially defensively. And just overall all around, I think Real Madrid could be the ones that finish out on top. I think it might mean that Atletico finish third with Barcelona second, but it's so tight at the moment, it really could go anywhere.
Yeah, definitely. As I mentioned a few seconds ago, all tied at 57. Let's take a break from the top three and look at the rest of the league and some interesting storylines that we've talked about on the show over the last year, but something that's been coming up a lot lately in different media outlets, Valencia having a new owner, or potentially having a new owner. What do you think that could do to this club? They used to be a top tier team. I guess they still are there in seventh place. But what kind of energy would it provide to this club if they had a new owner who really wanted to invest a lot of money?
I think it would transform them completely. I think the biggest issue is the owner really what he's made out to be. That's going to be the hardest thing. When Malaga took over, there's the initial impacts. They come out, they spent money, they look good, they got in some good players, they did well, qualified for the Champions League, got to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. Then there's the impact of the owners weren't really as they pretended to be. It all really depends on whether the owners are what they've made out they're going to be. If they are the real deal, the owners, then that'd be great news for the rest of the league, really. It means there'll be another team competing up there. Towards the end of this transfer window, they've obviously had to bring in players knowing that they weren't going to be took over, so they brought in loan deals like Philip Senderos. And it's a case of now just sort of treading water. The results seem to have picked up, so they must see something behind the scenes that something's going to happen. And hopefully they will get took over, and then they can get rid of the debt, finish building the stadium. and we'll have another foursome in the league once more.
Speaking of another team that's been really fun to watch this year, the team that just played Real Madrid this past week in Villarreal, being led by Giovanni Dos Santos and a lot of other great players. How impressive have you been with their consistency throughout the season, especially considering they're coming up from the second division? You know, they've been in that 7, 6, 5, even 4 spot, you know, all season. And this club, of course, is a club that has had a lot of success in Europe, but how important has it been for them to you know, remain in the top 6 while bouncing back after being in the second league?
Yeah, I think they've done really well, to be honest. For a team that's just come up from the second division, you don't really expect to be doing so well. They've lost 2 of the last 3 matches, but only 7 matches in the whole of the league overall. Hopefully, you know, with the young players that have arrived on loan in January, that should help bolster the squad a little bit. They've got Oliver Torres, who's been lighting up Atletico Madrid whenever he's appeared, and he's a big player for the future, really. And also young Juan Roman as well, a player that I know well. When he was at Manchester City, I interviewed him, met him a couple of times, and he's been doing quite well at Barcelona, and I think it's a chance for him now to get a bit of first-team football, and they should grow really together.
Let's take a look now at this Atletico Madrid team. I've written a couple of articles about, you know, the core, Koke, Diego Costa, and Courtois. What are the chances that all 3 of these players, Paul, will be in the starting 11 come September 2014?
1 or 2 of them there, but all 3 of them to be there together, I think it's pretty unlikely. Atletico Madrid's financial situation dictates that they do need to sell players, despite the fact that they're doing well. They've managed to hold off for now and to keep hold of their best players. Courtois, obviously, they don't actually own, Chelsea own him, although they are interested in bringing him in. I don't think Mourinho's going to let him go. He'd have seen enough of Courtois when he was in Madrid to realise that he's the real deal. Piszczek hasn't exactly made many mistakes this season. He's been consistent and done well, but Courtois has been very good. And for the future, then I think Courtois will definitely be going back to Chelsea. And in terms of whether Koke or Diego Costa leaves, then it's whoever comes in with the big money, really. I think a few clubs have been interested, and unfortunately, the core of this team won't be kept together.
It's unfortunate. I mean, how much of a big deal has this been for La Liga to have a third team be able to actually contend and actually believe that they have a good chance to win the title?
It's massive, really, because it puts the league in a whole new light, doesn't it, really? If you look at the way it's been over the last few seasons, it's just been branded as a two-team league. And from people looking from the outside, it adds a bit more excitement to the whole of the league. And in Spain, I think they're a lot happier to see another team up there competing and really going for it. Whether or not they can maintain that right towards the end, hopefully they will, remains to be seen.
All right, let's move on to some of the big news in England and tackle it. We haven't spoken about it yet on the show. Who exactly do you think is to blame at Manchester United? I mean, there's so many different opinions. A lot of the fans seem to be losing more and more faith in David Moyes every single day. What exactly is the issue here? I mean, this is something we've asked every single guest who comes on every week, and it's always interesting to see what a specific analyst and writer thinks is the main problem at United. Is it the players? Is it that Sir Alex got every single inch and every single, you know, 150% out of them? Is it the tactics? Is Moyes not the right guy? I mean, what is the number one reason why they're not winning right now?
I think it's a bit of everything, really, but I'd say the number one reason would be more the David Moyes. Alex Ferguson got the best out of the players to their ability. For me, Alex Ferguson would have won the league with any of the top 6 sides last season just by his personality, by his motivational skills. For me, David Moyes isn't quite the top manager for a team like Manchester United. People will argue and say that he needs to be given time, that he needs to be able to blend the team as he wants and buy the right players in, but we're coming to an era now where you've got to be able to take over a side for what they are. You can't come into a team and saying, right, we need a whole new 20 new players and going out and buying a new squad. And I'll be interested to see how he does with Juan Mata. I'm not too sure that he can get the best out of number 10s. He's already struggled with Kagawa and not really got him firing on all cylinders. In fairness, Wayne Rooney's done well when he's played the number 10 position. He's played as more of a striker, so he's joined up with the attack. It seems that Juan Mata's going to play probably out in one of the wings, and is that his best position? It's going to be interesting to see how they do. But yeah, it comes a time when you think, this is Manchester United, so Manchester United should improve, they should get better. And you can never write Manchester United off. But we're entering a different Manchester United now from when that we know. So now that sort of thing goes by the wayside, because it is a different Manchester United, and to be honest, they don't look like coming back up and getting back into the Champions League positions.
So, what exactly? I mean, would you say that they should give him towards till the end of the season to maybe get them into at least Europa League? I mean, that's now starting to become a possibility with Newcastle and Southampton easily able to pass them. Also, those two teams really struggling the last couple of months. But would you go ahead and say it's time they should sack him before the end of the season? Or would you let him finish out the season and see what he can do in the Champions League? A very easy, or not easy, but an easier draw in the Champions League against Olympiacos compared to the other clubs. What can Moyes do to rescue the season? And at this point, what would be a success for the front office going into next season? What would they be happy with Moyes accomplishing?
I think they'd be happy just to get into the Champions League positions and to get fourth place. I don't think that's a realistic at the moment, although you never can tell. I'm not sure. You don't really know what the Glazers are going to want. They're not going to be happy with this, the way things are going. And they're going to want an improvement. And I think they'll give him to the summer, see what players can be brought in. But the problem with doing that is if the opening 10 games don't go to plan, is then they're going to be looking to get rid of him. Personally, for me, then I think it's time for him to go. I don't think his tactics are suited for a team of Manchester United's capability. He hasn't got a track record that suggests that he can turn things around or he can improve things with situations that he's in. I think the club are struggling.
Who do you think would be a successor for him? I mean, if he does get let go now or at the end of the season, who's a guy who you think can fit in with the group of players they have? Or do you think it's time to clean shop, let a lot of these players go and go on a, you know, Man City, PSG spree this summer and bring in a lot of talent? I mean, on the player personnel, can these players win the title with a different manager? Or is it just, you know, you said at the beginning a mixture of a lot of things, but if a new manager comes in, do you think he'd want to bring in his own guys, or can he work with the guys that are there?
To win the league now, he's definitely going to start clearing out, and that's where it becomes a question of, they could let David Moyes do that to an extent. They could let him shift the old guard players, let people like Ferdinand Vidic go, and then bring a new guy in once those sort of teething problems have been solved out. Similar sort of case, really, at Chelsea. It was Rafa Benitez, didn't do as bad a job as a lot of people seem to think, but he helped sort of moving of the old guard that didn't play John Terry quite as much. When Mourinho comes back now, it's just a little bit easier for him to now start moving those players aside. And I think that could be a similar situation at Manchester United. I'm not too sure, really, who could do the job. There's some fantastic managers out there. But at the moment, none of them, I don't think, would touch Manchester United. Last summer, I think a few more might have been interested. But at the moment, it's might have put a few off.
Man, who would have thought? Moving on right now, we'll go from 7th place to 1st place. Chelsea, you just brought up Jose Mourinho. He keeps insisting that you know, this team is not, I don't want to say good enough, but he keeps saying, you know, we're not the title favorites, we don't expect to win the title, blah 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 blah. With that all said, do you think this team is strong enough with the play of Hazard and the midfield, and even, you know, the big thing in the January transfer window is their strikers, you know, not very good, but even with that, they seem to be playing well. Their midfielders are scoring a ridiculous amount of goals. What do you think about this Chelsea squad? Are they strong enough to win. I mean, they have fierce competition. We saw how strong Liverpool was this past weekend, how you know, amazing all their players could be. Tottenham had a huge win against Everton. You never can count Everton out. And then, of course, United is still a team that you can lose against. So what do you expect from Chelsea at the end of the season?
Yeah, I think Chelsea can be league champions. I thought at the start of the season with Jose Mourinho returning and Alex Ferguson leaving, I think Chelsea are getting stronger as each game goes by. They never seem to blow anybody away, but they seem to be very resolute, very Jose Mourinho-like in the way they come about. I love some of his comments as well. People look so much that he says that they're a small horse and that they haven't got the squad and they haven't got the capabilities of Manchester City, but it's just Mourinho playing mind games that seem to wind the fans up so much. I've been really impressed with Willian. I think he's been a very impressive player that seems to fit very well into the Mourinho style of things. And that's probably why they got rid of Juan Mata. It's last season's best player, but they've made a decent profit on him. And I think they'll really kick on now towards the end of the season.
If they win the title, wouldn't it be interesting to see that they won it pretty much with a, I mean, you could say a very, not the best striking unit, not the best strikers. I mean, Samuel Eto'o is past his prime. I think everyone would agree on that. Fernando Torres, you know, you could say what you want about him, but he's not the same as he used to be. And at the end of the day, Demba Ba is not really getting that much time. So if this team could win the title, wouldn't it be pretty impressive with the strikers that they've been using?
Yeah, it would be. They've got obviously got some very good players behind them that are capable of chipping in the goals. The other strikers have contributed, but like you say, none of them have really stood out. Like it was last summer, they were looking at Falcao. None of them are even close to his level. And I know, I think Mourinho's a big fan of Diego Costa. If they were to get Diego Costa, then things next season, it's sort of frightening that what they could do with a striker that's working on all cylinders, really.
All right, sticking with Chelsea, just one more question before we move on. Only a couple of minutes left. What's really fascinating about this team, you look at the list of players they have on loan, meaning these players belong to Chelsea. They're just out on loan. Obviously, Victor Moses at Liverpool, Lukaku at Everton, Courtois we spoke about, but Kurt Zoma they just got and sent him back to France. Patrick Van Holt, who's playing right now in Holland. With these youngsters, all these guys are relatively young. I mean, I think the oldest one out of the ones I just mentioned is 23 years old. If these guys come in and then add to the club that they have, how good can this Chelsea be team? Let's remind people, our Marco van Ginkel, the Dutch U21 star, tore his ACL and will be back at full strength at the start of the season. They just added Mohamed Salah, who's a fantastic player. With the guys I just mentioned, Paul, that are out on loan, which, you know, let's assume most of them come back, or even maybe not this year, next year, how strong can this team be in the next couple of years in the Premier League under Jose Mourinho?
It can be strong, but I think there's one issue is how well Mourinho can bring through those youngsters. And I don't see a lot of them getting a chance. I think they could probably, one or two of them, will be given a chance to play under Mourinho and to improve the team overall. There's one issue that sort of brought to my attention not that long ago by a friend of mine, and that's really that Chelsea as a squad or as a club don't really try and bring through the youngsters as they do. They sort of get loads of youngsters in, send them all out on loan, gain experience, and if they can sell some of those players and make a couple of £1 million profit, but they do it to say 10 of those players, then that sort of funds the bigger transfers in the long run. So they've just got a different sort of system really to how they see youth players at Chelsea, and it's difficult for any young player to break through there. But if you're impressed to the extent that some of them, like Courtois at Atletico Madrid, then you can't fail to be impressed, and you can't fail to think that it's going to improve your squad if they come back.
We only have a couple minutes left with Paul. We'll stick in the Premier League, and let's talk about Liverpool, because whoever watched that match, 4-0, 20 minutes in, absolute domination. Raheem Sterling, who I've always loved, has started to really pick up his play. Sturridge doesn't seem to show any letdown from the injury that took him out for, 2-3 months. 50 points, only 6 points separates them. This team is very tricky. We think that they're title contenders, then they have a couple rough weeks where they can't beat the good teams. Now they just slaughter Arsenal. What should we expect from this team? I mean, it's amazing how you don't really know what to know anymore. You don't know what to expect from all these teams, all the way from the bottom, Sunderland and Cardiff and all these teams at the bottom, all the way to the top. I mean, what do you look at Liverpool doing the next few months? We've spoken on the show about how difficult Arsenal's schedule is and how they could really drop very quickly. I mean, within a few weeks, they could be in fourth or fifth place easily. Is Arsenal a team on the way down and Liverpool on the way up?
Possibly, but I think Liverpool have to be content with finishing in the top four. The plan when Brendan Rodgers took over was a three-year plan to get them back into the Champions League. At the moment, they're ahead of schedule, so he's right to play down the suggestion that they can win the title. Each game, he's going to take each game as it goes. There's just as easily to drop points as Fulham as they were to then destroy Arsenal at the weekend. So like you say, it's difficult to watch to really know, but they haven't got the squad to contend overall. Defensively, three of the four first-choice defenders are out injured, but they're still doing well and they're still keeping up there. Arsenal's schedule looks a little bit difficult, especially when you look at the next week with Manchester United, Liverpool and Bayern Munich all coming up. The defence has been very resolute up till now. They've won 10 matches at home, 2-0.
Okay, sticking with the Premier League. I think we lost you there for a second, but you're back on with us. Paul, let's end with this. Man City, a team that, has the firepower. People say the most talented. How do you explain what happened this past weekend, just drawing against Norwich, especially when Arsenal lost and they had a chance to get points, and Chelsea, of course, beat Newcastle? What exactly happened? I mean, we saw this against Norwich. We also have seen this against Sunderland earlier this year where they kind of just seem to disappear. I mean, you watch the match and you wonder what exactly are they doing. It seems to be very, relaxed. And how do you explain what happened and what's happened in the past with these teams that are in the bottom?
I'm not sure it can be explained. I think in the past you could sort of say that they were getting used to a new system under Pellegrini, a new style of play. So you can understand they're getting a few teething problems now. The style of play seems to be a bit more working a bit more. Obviously, Aguero was missing, but they're still, Negredo and Dzeko have still been doing very well. I think Fernandinho's a big miss when he's out. I think that to play the 4-2-2 system, as whereas you got your two central midfielders and your two wide players and your two strikers like that, I think with Toure and Fernandinho, they could do it as a perfect double pivot where the one goes forward, the one sits, the other one goes forward, the one sits. I think they struggle to do that. And obviously with Dean Michaelis, it means that Dean Michaelis would have to sit there and then Toure can go a bit more forward. I've seen a few ex-midfielders like Danny Murphy, Didier Mann, turn around and say that Toure at times can be a bit of, cause a bit of problems really, but it's the way he can go tactically, a bit naive, he can wander around and not be quite as useful as we seem to think, but it is a bit difficult for Man City at the moment. But I'm sure they'll bounce back soon and be up there challenging.
All right, Paul, thank you so much for coming on. Everyone can check out La Liga UK, which, as I mentioned, I go there all the time. You can all check out Paul's work on 442B and Sport, You Bet, and other great places, and follow Paul to learn about what's going on in La Liga in English at Paul. WILKES footy FOOTY. Paul, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a blast.
You're welcome. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to this edition of Kicking Out with Rafael here on World Football Daily. We will be back next week with some top analysts. As always, thank you to Christopher Atkins from ESPN FC and the Bleacher Report. And thank you very much to Paul Wilkes, who is a contributor writer to a lot of great places and editor of La Liga UK. As always, you can check me out on Twitter, Rafael, R-A-P-H-A-E-L, G23. Tweet me, write me, talk to me, I'll answer. Have a great day, and thank you for listening to the show.